Okay, this is Joan Weaver and Rosetta Graff, and we're in the home of Leroy Spark today. It's March 16th, 2011, mm-hmm. and we're conducting an interview for the Kinsley Library. First of all, what is your full name?
Elmer Leroy Spark.
And where do you currently reside?
At 915 East 7th, Kinsley, Kansas.
And when and where were you born?
I was born in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
And what were the names of your parents?
My parents was Elmer R. and Ada Mae Zion Spark.
Could you spell that maiden name? What was it?
Z-I-O-N.
Okay, Zion. Okay, occasionally I'll ask you to spell something for our transcriber. And then your grandparents' names on both sides.
Okay. My grandparents' names on the father's side was John Raymond and Esther Lou. Gray was her last name, G-R-A-Y.
Okay.
And on the mother's side was Leroy Zion and where's Grandma?
Grandma, yeah.
Yeah. And Grandma's name was a real difficult one, I'll tell you. It was, Overholser. Overholser.
Now you'll have to spell that one.
And Overholser, O-V-E-R. I've got H-O-L-S-E-R.
Okay.
And her first name was Lily June. And
can you describe the makeup of your family? Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes. I had one brother and two sisters. And my brother's name was John Raymond. And my oldest sister was Shirley Carpenter now. And then Carol June was the youngest girl's name, and she's passed away.
And where were you in that birth order?
I was the oldest. I was 4 and a half years older than my brother. And, my folks were married in 27. They graduated from Colorado Springs, or Manitou, and they lived out there at that time. Dad finished school out there. Of course, Mom lived out there, and they graduated out there. So we were out there for, and Grandpa was out there then.
And they both graduated from college?
They both graduated from high school at Manitou, yeah. He went to work for Platte Weber out there, and then...
what did Platte Weber do?
They hauled fuel up in the mountains, and they had trucks that hauled up there. Anyway, I come along in 29 then, and Grandpa got sick and he wanted to come back to farm. He had a farm down south of Fellsburg. And so that's when we came back from there. And I was only 4 months old then.
So, 1929.
In 29, yes.
So your great-grandparents were from the Fellsburg area?
Well, they were, yeah. On Dad's side, yeah. And my mother's folks' grandparents were from Colorado Springs.
What brought your grandfather's parents to Edwards County?
Okay. He, like everybody else, they trailed through about the same trails down through the years. They settled in Russell County, south of the Smoky Hill River. And of course, there's a ranch land up there then, and they did break out some of it, of course. But Grandpa busted rock up there. He made a bunch of them posts. They did that. They'd take two posts to the day and go set the fence, on a buck wagon. And That's the story I've heard anyhow. And they built some bridges on them smaller streams up there out of that same kind of rock. But anyhow, they all worked, hard workers, all their down through the years. They was mainly just workers. But they had a chance. They'd heard about this opening up down here in Edwards County, and so 1900 they came down here and purchased a half section down there. My granddad did, and Uncle Tommy, which was Dad's half brother's boy, he was up there too, of course. And they came down here and built on the houses and property. And before they brought the family down here, they worked down here a lot doing that during the summer times. My Uncle Tommy, he had quite a family. But they lived three-quarters of a mile north of us, where we settled out down there. 4 miles south and a mile west of Fellsburg, where we were living. And
what was life like on the farm?
That's all we knew. You know.
What did you do?
You had chores, and yeah.
Did you have animals and grow crops?
Yes. Yeah, they had cattle and hogs, and yeah, we provided for ourselves, and we canned a lot of stuff. And yeah, and in the fall, the neighbors would go together, and we'd butcher hogs. We had a big old vat out there, and you pour it full of hot water and scrape the hair off, you know, and that, but butchered and then cured them out and hang them on the north side of the house. That's where they hung in sacks up there. And we just get it as we needed, the bacon and the hams and stuff. And it was the same way with the beef. We'd do beef, and but then we cold packed it. You cut it up in little jars, and you packed it in jars, and that. Well, of course, everybody had cellars, and of course the well. They had a well out there in the wintertime. They'd lower stuff down and well, you'd replace them, and that's what they used out there. But the well had a big tank out there that. In the well house, they had a well house, and the water run from the well near that and on out to the two tanks we had out there for the cows to drink out of. And
so that was your refrigerator, the water?
Yeah, oh yeah, we never had ice till later on, you know, and so yeah.
Did you ever have an ice house? Did you ever harvest ice in the wintertime?
They brought it around finally.
Fine, but you didn't.
Yeah,
never
we didn't do that.
From the river?
No. There's no river down there. No, nothing like that. But
so what were your chores as a boy growing up?
Getting into kindling and the cobs, you know, they raise corn and bring a few cobs in to get things going. And we had two round-bellied stoves, one in the kitchen and one in the living room. Of course, the bedrooms were always cold. We had a lot of comforts then. Always run in and warm your pillow up in the wintertime, and then run to the bed and get all the comforts.
Did you take the hot bricks with you? Or
no. Heard of that. But, yeah, it was a good life. We enjoyed it. And sometimes we had big snows. As a kid, I remember we slayed down on the south side of the house while we come off of the peak, and then it had a porch roof that just sloped. And it completely, we went off the house down with snow on the south side and whirled up. We used to have some big snows. But you always had plenty to eat because you provided for yourself. You always set and canned stuff and everything. But yeah, it was in the wintertime, we had this hedgerow out there, tougher nails. I'd go out there, I'm sure I didn't help my dad a lot, but we'd go out there with a saw, and he'd run one end, and I'd be on the other end and saw them trees down and saw them up in the logs, and then He did the splitting, of course, but I had to get the stuff into the house. And that was my job. And another job I could remember, I was always in trouble about, I'd forget to empty. After they started delivering ice later years, it was my job to keep that pan emptied of the water underneath it, you know. Oh, man, pretty soon I'd see it out on the kitchen floor, and uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Of course, I always spilled a bunch before I could get that out, you know. So then I had to clean that up. Those were the things. But we always had hogs, and, you know.
Did you have a few milk cows?
Yeah, we always had at least four to six milk cows.
Did you do the milking?
I did, and not when I was young, but later years, yeah, I had to do the milking too. And we always had, everybody always had one old cow that kicked real bad. And it kicked the harvest stand. We had a harvest stand, of course, in harvest. And it kicked him out of the barn one time, and so he wasn't going to do that anymore. So anyhow, it was getting pretty late, and Mom said, you want to try, you know, milking those cows? And I said, well, yeah, I guess. I didn't want to, but anyhow, I went out there and talked to old Whitey just like Dad talked to her, which is pretty rough sometimes. And anyhow, she never kicked me at all. So I from then on, I learned how to handle that old cow. But we did have difficult times with the hogs sometimes. We had a number of hogs around there. In fact, when I joined 4-H at 10, I was in 4-H for 10 years, and we got up and we had 200 head hogs around there by the time. I brought my first old Prairie Lee, my first hog from up north here, and I had to go to the bank to borrow the money. That was part of it, I guess. At $42.50, I gave that old thing. Well, she came through with a big litter, more than she had a table for. I mean, she had 13. But anyhow, they did real well. Of course, we keep saving the gilts and fatten the boars up and sell them, you know, or the other way around. Anyhow, Dad and I always did all that handiwork too. I was good at catching and throwing, and he did the work on them, and we just did things like that all the time. I mean, it was no big deal. Yeah, we got dirty and stuff like that, but that was part of the life, you know. You didn't worry about things like that, but so we enjoyed it. And
You raised the feed for the hogs, and then gave them milk. You took the cream off, and
Dad. For my part, Dad let me have 10 acres. I raised wheat, and I now raise. I feed for the others. I had calf to show calves too, so I rose milo and feed. And Dad gave me 10 acres apiece to. So I had to take care of that, and that all had to be separate, you know, and everything. But yeah, that was part of the training of it, and had keep books on it.
And this was dry land farming?
Yeah, dry land. We dry land farmed all the time.
What would your yields be?
Well, about all the way from hardly nothing up to, you know, maybe 20 bushel. Big farm, you know. And the weeds would be so high, we'd put a log chain between the lister deals to drag the weeds down sometimes, so that the dirt would cover them over, you know, have a chance to start rotting and stuff before we had to sled it back, you know. And yeah, it was a long siege. We down in Fellsburg, that we farmed 3/4 over south of Truesdale too, and Anis Crabtree, ground over there. They came from up in the same neck of the woods, crab trees and nuisance. Some of them came from up in there too. There was quite a few of them up in that neck of the woods. But anyhow, they all came down from up in that when they started settling down in here.
Now, do you were you too young, or do you have recollections of the Dirty 30s?
Yes, I remember the Dirty 30s.
Yes. Tell us about
that. Oh, yeah. They'd come in. We raised our own chicks then, you know. We set your own hens. I mean, we had coops out there. Oh, yeah. I remember that rolled into the Northwest one time. Just rolled loud and dark. And, yeah, it'd get so bad. They take sheets, old sheets and stuff, and we crammed in around the windows and stuff to keep the window, you know, half of the dirt out. And we just had kerosene lamps in. We didn't even have a lead lamp. We just had little kerosene lamps and lanterns, you know, that we took out to the barn and stuff. But you never noticed any difference. I mean, that's the way it was. Until we got Aladdin land, I remember that. Millers and stuff would get in there, and of course you had to put on a new deal all the time, because they'd get down in there and blow that, so you'd have to redo that again. But it made a lot brighter light.
Do you remember any grasshoppers or anything like that?
Yeah, they came through, yeah. They came through. We was on our way out to Colorado Springs, see my grandparents at one time, and I couldn't believe it. Out here along the border, they was just sticking on the buildings, just a mass of them, just sticking on the buildings. There's so many of them. Yeah, they eat the bark off everything. I mean, there was nothing. They just cleaned it. Yeah, I remember that too. Yeah, the and Dust Bowl days, it covered up machinery along the fence rows. What we do there, where we was at down, it blowed down there too. And we just put another fence up above where the cows start walking over the fence. Well, you just put up another one on top of it. And yeah, there was three bad years there. Yeah, Dad went, nobody raised much of anything. Everybody in the same boat. And he went to work for WPA, and we had two horses, and he pulled a Fresno, you know, and moved dirt. And this curve, as you're going on the east curve, as you go south toward Greensburg, he worked on that for till they got that curve built up. And
that's on Highway 183.
183, yeah, it was old number one then. But yeah, they did that, and then he worked over by Rattlesnake Creek, over by Truesdale. Then over in there, he had to do the same thing. But yeah, he'd leave early in the morning and have to feed the horses over there, and everything left him over there, of course. And then it'd be late when he'd come home. But that's what we did then. And of course, Mr. Narrett, we got our groceries and stuff. What we needed was over at Centerview. Mr. Narrett was.
What? How do you spell his name?
Oh, man, I don't remember. He eventually moved up here to Kinsland, up there. He lived up here south of the courthouse.
It's Mayor?
Narrett.
Narrett.
Now, I don't know just
well,
how to spell
up,
it.
But Narrett.
But anyhow, that guy, he kept everybody in some groceries, their needs down there that they needed. But it finally got so bad, well, he needed some money too. So a bunch of the guys had to go in and sign papers, and Dad was one of them. And he was able to get some more then. But then later years, Mr. Narrett, their school, he got a bunch of houses that moved in there, or they built some more, and they were built for the teachers down at Centerview. And Dad and those guys worked on those things then to kind of help him back, you know, on that, because that's what people did them days. They just helped each other. Money wasn't the thing back there. I mean, you just helped each other out, which was a good thing.
So during the Dirty 30s, then did your father cut back on raising cattle because of lack of feed? Or?
No, we always... Well, that was a survival deal. You always, you didn't carry an excessive amount. Uncle Tommy, Uncle Tommy had six horses up there because he always did have, but he had some ground. He bought some more ground down south that Ed, his oldest boy, moved down there. And the pastures in dry weather got so bad, the cactus was just growing up to him.
Oh.
And he had quite a few children then, and a lot older than I was, of course. But anyhow, they'd go by and have the wagon full of those cactus, and they'd taken them down there, and they'd throw them in the blowouts at where it was blowing down south in the pasture. That was all pasture. He had five quarters they bought down there. So anyhow, I remember doing that, and Ed also drug the roads and used a pair of them to drag these little graders, you know, that they had in the rural then, and he'd drag the road down there, and it was, you know, us boys would go as he come by our house. I remember we'd go out there and grab onto the axle that, and the poor horses had to pull harder because we was dragging their feet, of course, but Ed was always good. But yeah, it was just life of fun all the time. We'd make us a tea and get a steel ring that used to come off of all the outside hubs of the wagons, you know. Anyhow, we'd run them down the road, see who could get the farthest, you know, and you could get them rolling and keep her going. But that was all entertainment, you know. We had great big barns. I mean, we had big hay lofts, and you go down and get a bunch of plant, and it'd take it back to the back, you know, and then you drop it. But Uncle Tommy had one, and we had one there on our farm, too. So everything was inside the barn, feed and grain and stuff for the cattle. But winter times got cold. Sometimes you needed a rope almost to get out to the barn. You couldn't hardly see it. It'd be blowing through there. And Grandpa planted a lot of fruit trees then, too. So we did have some fruit, but the 30s was pretty bad. It done away with them, and we never redone it down there. We did up here, of course. But.
So now where did you go to school?
Well, I went to Fellsburg. Yeah, I went to Fellsburg School down there. And I was... could have been a good student probably, but I'd rather be out on the farm. And I Mrs. Grunder, she was a good teacher, I'm sure, but I wasn't going to go to school one time, and Mom took me up there. I didn't go that morning when Mom took me up there, but when I got back home, Dad brought me back, and I never had any trouble going to school after that. And
did he convince you?
Yeah, it took a little convincing. Yeah, but we all went through that in life.
How many kids were in your class at Fellsburg?
There was four in my class at that point. Yeah.
And did you go all the way through? Or did you have to move? Were you consolidated?
Yes, we consolidated, of course.
And who did you consolidate?
And we went, well, that district was split. And some of them went to Centerview, and some of us went to Truesdale. And that's just the way it was.
And which way did you go?
I went to Truesdale, now Jack's Fork, he adopted him. He went to Centerview, but it closed down, and so he graduated from Truesdale the last year. He had to go over there, too. So,
what grade were you in when you went to Truesdale?
Oh, let's see. Well, I'd been in seventh grade. Yeah.
And then
we had six grades there, three in one room and three in the other room, and two teachers in. Yeah, and then we went down there. And then
you graduated from Truesdale?
No.
No?
No. I went down there a couple of years, then I went up to Lewis. We moved up to the farm up here between Lewis and Kinsley. Yeah, Joe Barrett farm. We Dad bought that. So we moved up here then. And so then we was practically on the border in this deal. But we went to Lewis. So I went over there 3 years, and during the time I had polio, bovril type polio, and my brother had polio too. We ended up in Grace Hospital. And
yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Well,
nobody
yeah.
remembers polio in this country.
Oh yeah, Dr. Jarrett down there, he was a cripple himself, and Grace Hospital down there was full of it. I mean, they finally put us clear up on the third floor. But when we first went in, well, they were doing it down in the basement because they'd hot pack in everything, you know. That was the main, and do your stretching exercise and things. But anyway, yeah.
How old were you at this time?
Oh, I was probably 15, I don't know, 15? 16, somewhere in there, I guess. But anyhow, yeah, I thought that I had the flu or something, you know. I was out on a tractor when I got sick, in fact, and I got feeling better, and we had to run a tractor all the time because we swung so much ground. And five-quarters an 80 with a little F-30 International. And so, anyhow, I went back out after dinner. I said, I feel all right. I went back out and went down the corner west and north a half a mile, went and go up in the field, and I started sledding back. It was time to cut the ridges back. That's what I was doing. And anyhow, I got sick again. And so...
I did go back.
I got sick. And so I went back home. But I didn't remember, after I got back home, I didn't even remember getting up there. And so I was, they looked at pretty close in. And so then they knew there was something wrong because I couldn't whistle or anything like that. It was dropping the air, and so
there's some paralysis.
You got polio. So Dad towed me in the car into Hudson, and we went in. Well, it was just a couple weeks later, and they brought my brother John down there, and he was having trouble, and well, in fact, he was his legs. He couldn't go on. And so anyhow.
So with you, it only affected your face, not your legs?
Yeah, it didn't bother that part at all. And so I got to doing other things later on. I've always had trouble with my throat. So it just never did come back quite right there.
Was there a lot of polio?
There was a lot of us in that. In fact, when 4-H'er was... seven of us from that Lewis area had polio. They treated my oldest sis at home because Mom, see, there were so many of us down there, the parents took different times help doing the hot packing on those kids down there. It took different days doing it, you know. And it was quite a...
How long were you there?
I was down there. I was 5 weeks down there.
5 weeks.
And, anyhow, that's part of life about polio. But it was full. There was a big bunch of it then.
Now, what kind of farm implements were you using at this time?
Well, we listed and slitted back and tandem disc or single disc, either way. It was sandy ground, and that they've changed that, thank God. They've got that change now to no-till farming is much better. Yeah, the ground got to blowing back in the 30s so bad. Everybody had broke this land relatively new, you know. They was breaking too much out there. And, well, then we went back to leaving strip farming, you know. Or we even would hook behind our tractor three of these little old horse-drawn deals that went between the rows of corn or feed that you list in, you know. Well, at that time, we had these planters that just turned and maybe it made a good plant, maybe it didn't, you know, but that's the way it was back in them days. You didn't have these good planters like they had then. Anyhow, we would drill wheat in between that. And so that helped prevent the wind erosion and everything, and also shaded the ground and everything, but it made a difficult in a little 8 foot tandem disc. When you just went there a third row, why, it would go down between those and you'd get the ground raised for the wheat then that way, but then after that was down, you just planted over the top of everything. So it was just different ways that they were trying to take care of the erosion that happened back in the 30s then, but until, well, they don't mow board plow like they used to and everything like that. It's just not necessary anymore. And we never fertilized. The only fertilizer we done then is cleaning out the barns and the chicken houses and everything like that. And yeah, and we put that on the ground, of course, scattered that out. That was always a job nobody wanted, but that's all right. And anyhow, we never fertilized her. Even after we come up north here, we never fertilized. We mow board plowed up here a lot. About every third year, we mow board plow up here. But the ground was more solid up here.
And what kind of a tractor was it that you're...
This is F-30 International.
F-30 International?
Originally about 25 horsepower. And we put it on LP gas. At that time, it was about six and a half cents a gallon. That's all it was. We mounted a big tank on there, you know. And so, yeah, that's the way we farmed after we moved up here. And that was another thing to show the difference. And Dad bought that 10-foot combine when we were still down in Fellsburg. He bought that up here at Lewis. They had a deal up there where you buy Machinery International, that was. And he bought that up there for, it was $1,100 or something like that, brand new. Little Waukesha engine on it. Next year, the tractor he was pulling it with, didn't work out. It was on lugs. It didn't work out very good, so he did. He bought this F-30 International in 38. Then he gave him $900 for that, brand new. Well, okay, then later years, they come out, and a few years later, I mean, he missed some payments on it, I guess, because of blowing and everything, and he only owed $450. They was going to repossess it. Dad, and of course, he bailed it. No, they ain't going to take it. Well, they'd have to go back and get the sheriff paper so that they could get it with the sheriff, you know. So in the meantime, Dad went up to the bank and got $450, and they paid it off then when they come back. But anyhow, it was tough times. And all the fuel, even the little smart, I was a little thin kid, but I was pretty tall. Anyhow, I climb up there, but how you put fuel in the tractors then? We didn't have these running out. No, we had 55-gallon drums, and you'd lean it over by a guy and run it into this can, this deal that you poured it. Of course, we had funnels, and then you'd have to get up on the tractor and pour that into the funnel. That's how you fill the tractors up. It was a lot of work that they don't understand. Yeah, we scooped all the wheat and everything that one summer. That's after we was up here. I run the tractor a lot at night, and in the daytime, we had a hard hand, but I'd catnap and I'd hold the wheat in the daytime and catnapped in between, see. But we just had to work a lot of hours. And sometimes we just sleep on the load of wheat until the next morning. It was cooler,
yeah,
you know, and
comfortable.
What the heck? We didn't. Saturday night's when you got a bath. And, you know, the little ones was always first, of course. And I don't know when the folks bathed, but anyhow, that was. I remember that. And the kitchen floor, the big tub come out there, and we'd get ready for bath. And we went to church, usually on Sunday morning. We went over to a little church over at Red Mound Church. It was Quaker Church at that time. And they always had somebody over there. And then later on, it closed down, and we went to UB Church there in Fellsburg then. And,
okay, let's. You lived at the Fellsburg Farm and then Lewis.
Yes.
In Fellsburg, did you have electricity, or when did you get electricity?
No, we never got electricity till after we left down there.
Okay.
And then we came up here, and when we moved up here, we had a 32 volt plant, motor one, and we had a wind charger up here. That was only 32 volt. Yeah. And we had a Chevelle deal that we run off of LP gas for a refrigerator up here. Yeah, and
Was it before the war? It was after the war.
Yeah, it was. It comes through from Pratt, you know, and they build it up this way. Now, KPNL did go out here, but it didn't get down our way either. But I think maybe, must have been about 46, 47.
Right after the war.
Yeah, it was in there sometime because we were up here at the farm up here. I don't know when we got that. We were so glad to get that. Oh, man.
How about telephone? Did you have that in Fellsburg?
Yeah, that was another. That was one of those memory things that, yeah, long and too short. So I remember the ring down there. What the number was, I have no idea. But anyhow, yeah, there would be eight of us online down there. And, of course, you had batteries in there. That was a juice that carried it, but anyhow, sometimes you'd have to ask some of them to get off the line because you couldn't hear. There's too many dropping what was going on the line all the time. It rang on everybody's cord. But anyhow, yeah, those was a good old. Yeah, that was a crank phone then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
how about the communities? What was Fellsburg like? And when you were living there, and then Truesdale, and then Lewis, huh? You think
we, the communities down at Starton and Fellsburg, we neighbored a lot then. You didn't travel much. And, in fact, during the bad 30s there, we didn't hardly travel at all. In fact, we got finally two tires from Half Craft up here. And my gosh, we was about out of tires to go anywhere with on the vehicle. And
what were the stores in Fellsburg?
Grocery stores. Well, they still had post office. Yeah, the little bank had closed when I can't remember. The bank's still down there, but where the bank was. But of course, the garage was always there. The lumber yard was gone. I don't remember that, but they did have a lumber yard down there because that's where Grandpa got a lot of his stuff, I guess.
Was there a
cafe?
So
I was told, no, you wasn't nothing like that. You just went in and they'd slice you off whatever meat you wanted and stuff. You know, it came that way. Yeah.
And then Truesdale, was it about the same size?
It was a little larger than Fellsburg was. But as far as what was there, there was about Aunt Nancy. Well, it wasn't called Aunt Nancy till later, but railroad. Anyhow, it's what settled all them little towns down through there, clearing the Pratt, you know. But our neighbor Ed Johnson, he came down from up there. number two in Russell County, but he settled over by Byers to start with, but then he came back to, well, he was just a quarter mile north of us and back in the field a ways where he lived. So we neighbored with them a lot, and Charlie Bradley. Dad, when we came back, he helped Charlie Bradley. He was a mile south of us. And, of course, Uncle told me up to the north. And I mean, Charlie, I got real bad sick one time, and she walked that whole mile and brought a bunch of stuff. She put a mustard
glass. Who is she?
Mrs. Bradley.
Okay.
Yeah, Charlie Bradley's wife. Dad helped him, and he had fallen down there too. And anyhow, she heard that I was sick, and she put a mustard plaster on me one time, and by gosh, it worked. I mean, it broke it up. But yeah, I was, of course, my mom didn't know anything about that. My mother, her mother was a good cook, and she had a lot of dishes and things like that. Well, that's a bunch of them right there yet. She already gave the girls some of the things, but she loved dishes, and so she put on, out in Colorado Springs there, Butter Orts and some of them, they put on deal, and so she cooked for them and have, but anyhow, Mom never did learn to, she couldn't hardly break an egg when she married. Grandma just did it all, you know, at that time, and I'll get out, I'll do it, and anyhow. So anyhow, she had a lot of lessons to learn when she came back to the farm. You know, it was quite a hustle for
her. Your grandmother wasn't a farm woman.
No, she was.
So your mother wasn't a farm woman.
They was gotten a railroad. They had been railroad workers, mm-hmm. and some of them ended up big jobs on the railroad. But yeah, they had been on the railroad side. They were big bone people and heavy German people. And anyway. She didn't have the chance like a farm girls had. So she had, and so Grandma Johnson, Ruth's mother, which they cared for her mother too. She couldn't talk English very good. But anyhow, she taught Mom a lot about how to do things, and that's where all the canning come in and everything. And in fact, I remember when we'd make sausage, you know, they had a machine, a deal that you'd crank the sausage and clean up the inside, you know, and then you'd crank the sausage and tie them off. Well, anyhow, everybody got to do that and tie them off and everything, and then just keep it. But anyhow, Mom taught that. She thought that was terrible, you know. Well, it was good. I mean, heck, there's nothing wrong with it. But we wasn't sick a lot. Really, we wasn't back in them days. There was only about three medicines, you know. I mean, castor oil was one of them. You know, they didn't have. But anyhow, they had guys that come around.
Do you think your mother adjusted to being a farm wife?
Yeah, I think she
and
did.
And was happy?
She finally did. But they finally, when it got up here and things, they said, you got to get better, got to get better. Well, you know, it'd been a battle all the way. So she started working in town. Well, she went to work at the hospital mm-hmm. up here. For, we needed money. Us kids are getting up there then, you know. And so she went to work up here at the hospital over here on Fifth Street. And which a lot of them, clear from Truesdale, even worked up there then. But anyhow, that's how it was there. And then she went to work for at the Kinsley Bank. And she was, can't remember his name now. She was his secretary.
So she was supplementing the income. And then your father, you said he had harvest help. Was that the only help he had besides you boys?
Yeah. He never did have but one. He did it in the harvest time. Somebody to help, you know. I started in it when we was clear over south of Truesdale. That's where I first started I run a tractor and I was 13 then, and Dad was running the combine, he threw a lot of hands full of wheat at me. I was supposed to slow up or speed up or something, you know. But anyhow, I learned pretty soon. I listened to the motor on the combine, and when it got to running pretty free, I was supposed to speed up, and when it get to lugging down, slow it down, you know. But I learned. Anyhow, that's where I first started running the tractor.
You came up.
I liked it. I was used to singing.
You came up to Lewis, and you graduated in what year?
I graduated from Kinsley.
How'd you get to Kinsley?
I strayed around. Well, that's another story. Mr. Eggleston, he was a one-armed over there. He got a little irritated with me. There was one teacher over there that was always sending me up to the office. And a health teacher. And it was just her. It wasn't just me. But anyhow, I had to go to the office one day, and I waited and waited and waited and waited. Pretty soon he showed up. And he'd come on in and sat down over there and was doing whatever he needed to do right then, I guess. And pretty soon, he swung around in his chair.
Yep.
Pretty soon, he swung around in his chair and he says, I don't know what to do with you, really. I said, well, what do you mean? Well, he said, you've been coming up here so much. He says, I guess you can just come to school if you want to, or you don't have to. Okay.
How old were you at this point?
Well, I was old enough to know better, but...
15, 16?
No, I would probably have been about 17. That was after my dealing down the hospital. Anyhow, in fact, after I come back, I took two English classes over in that one year, I remember, and Mrs. Garrison led me do that. It was some kind of how much I'd missed and something. I had to redo some of it. And I got, so I finished up over there that year, but then I came over to Kinsley then. And I went two more years over here. I took a whole bunch of... I took a full course again over here in my fifth year when I really... And because I didn't have American history. I didn't even have American history, see. So I had to get all the things like that. And that's the reason that I spent so much time. Yeah, I was 20 years old before I got out.
Yeah.
And
you graduated what year?
49.
49.
And then next year I went to Dodge City Junior College and spent a year out there, and then I went and served. Yeah.
And during high school, were you athletic?
That's the reason I went to school. Yeah.
All the sports or?
I lettered in track 4 years, and football. Of course, we was undefeated while we was over there in football. I played again, basketball, yeah. We played on the cement floor over there.
Over where?
At Lewis.
At Lewis?
Yeah.
Basketball.
In Truesdale, I played over there. Most of them, they're going now and dead and gone. I was pretty fast then, and steal the ball and stuff.
Was sports an extracurricular activity, or was
it always was?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
music.
Some people said they had the last hour of the day for athletics.
Oh yes, yeah, the last 2 hours or less, I think were. But anyhow, yeah, they had study periods and recess. It was set up different than it is now altogether. Yeah.
And your father encouraged you in athletics and let you out of the farm chores, or?
Dad, no, you still had your own chores. You still had your own chores. Yeah, that was... No, he always encouraged me. Everybody encouraged all us kids. That's one thing. Their parents stayed behind the kids, and that's another thing. I remember any older person, that was always Mr. or Mrs. or something. You never called them by the first name. You just didn't do it. And your teachers, that was just a thing that parents taught their kids in. And so you didn't get ahead. It's just bad mouthing like they get away with now. But it's changed. Now they say you can't do this and can't do that, but that's kind of the way we learned back then. So.
And you went to Pratt JUCO. Now, did you?
I went to Dodge City.
Dodge City JUCO. And you commuted then and lived at home?
No, I stayed out there. I lettered the track out there. I went out for football, basketball. I didn't make it out there in basketball. But I run mostly long races. My senior year, I did about everything. But
so, how fast were you?
Not very fast. I was quick, but I mostly quarters, halves, and miles.
What was your mile time?
And I don't remember. I bet that's in there somewhere too, but I. Anyhow, half a mile, about 2.2 on half mile. I can't remember what we were under. I can't even remember that. But it was way up a lot more than 5 minutes. I don't remember what the heck it was even then. But I used to like to, that's all I did. I played myself for four and a half years, I'd go out there and throw the ball up on the barn and run and catch it, and Dad was gone all the time too. He trying to make a living too, and so I didn't have anybody to play with when we was around there for quite a while. And then John come along, and John was a studious kid. He never cared about doing things like that much as I did, seem like.
He was probably trying to live down your reputation.
Well, I don't know. I kind of, my brother made a statement a few years ago about that. He said it seemed like it. You and Dad always did everything. He said there wasn't anything for me to do. I said, I didn't mean to, and I guess that's the reason he felt like he was left out, I guess. And I don't know. I missed that. I didn't notice that till he mentioned it here a while back. He worked for Merlin Heat here two years, after, I was gone then. And,
we were up what was then. Kinsley like when you were graduating from school? Let's have a description of Kinsley and what you did in entertainment.
That's where we traded all the time after we moved up here, We used to come to, even when we was down in Fellsburg once in a while, but it was a thriving little town then. Gosh, it had all kinds of, any kind of implements you want to buy. There was a dealer here, and cars and trucks, and you could get anything you wanted here. And there were about three grocery stores that I can remember anyway. There was some more meat places too, but there was clothing stores. We'd buy, even after we moved up here, we'd need something and she'd just tell us boys, we'd go in there and get her clothes in there. Of course, then Mary was running Eller's store. Eller's was, we went in there when Eller's was too, but then, and we just go in there and get her stuff, and then Mom would pay the bill later, but somebody working here was always good too. He'd have you try them all clear down west there. Riches. We'd start out with Sears and Roebuck catalog, we got two pair of overalls and Mom made her shirts sometimes, and I never did like those shirts that she made. But we bought feed, you know, and you always use them flour feed sacks or whatever it was. And so a lot of women made the girls' clothes out of those too. But them shirts Mom used to make, I never cared much for them. But anyhow, shoes, you always got a new pair of shoes to start school. And
what was your entertainment on a hot date in high school? Or
I never dated. I never hardly ever dated. I don't know. I just...
Did you go to the movies?
No. We never went to movies very little. Once in a while on a Saturday night. And it'd be such a crowd there, it'd be terrible. But, you know, the town was full of people till midnight. I mean, there was a lot of people. They'd be around visiting, you know. And, well, you hadn't seen each other since the last week, I guess, or something, you know. But we didn't come up all the time, but we traded up here practically all together. I mean, well, it and the Sears Roebuck or whatever catalogs that we had, and the old radio. I remember when Dad first got that radio. Man, it took 3 big old batteries in the back of that thing, and they didn't last too long either. But it was all battery run, you know, but... And, well, they had, that was down at Felsburg, though, then, too. But anyhow, he had put a new well down there. The old one went bad. So, it was just a wood tower down there, of course.
I just realized that we skipped over. What's your memory of Pearl Harbor or World War II?
Oh, man. Yeah, I remember when that happened, but, you know,
did you hear about it? Where were you?
Well, I was probably here, school, or I don't know where I was at, but I just remember talking about it, and I thought that, gee whiz, where was we at? You know, they was pretty close to us, you know, and the Japanese, I thought somebody always had, you know, as a kid, I can never, you think people 40 years old, they're getting old, you know, they were getting old, but I always had a feeling as a kid, somebody always was in charge, you know, they knew how to do everything, seemed like, or take charge. But I remember when that happened, gosh, I said, well, where in the world are we at? Why would we have all these ships in one place? I mean, and this happened, you know. Of course, the war was going on in Europe, you know, but when we got hit, yeah, that was quite a shock.
Did it affect your family in any way? You had no relatives that had to fight?
Well,
you remember rationing and that sort
yes,
of thing?
Yes, I remember that. That's when we had trouble getting tires, yeah. And we needed 2 tires bad. We were still down at Felsburg then. And Hapcraft only got us hold of 2 tires. Yeah, we was in bad shape. Yeah, we eat some jackrabbits and things like that, you know.
And you remember the jackrabbit hunts?
Oh, yeah, I was in on it. Over here south of Lewis, yeah. Jackrabbits, they took in 4 sections there and let guys out, and we just kept walking in, you know, and they had this tent, and run them all in there, and doing so, they'd got 3 coyotes, too, but they shot them, of course. But anyhow, then you just went in there and clubbed them down, killed them that way. And
then what happened to the rabbits?
Well, they took their skins or whatever they did with them. I don't know who did charge that, but we happened out there, a mile, 2 miles south of Lewis there, which where it was at, too.
Now, what year would that have been?
Oh, man.
How old were you?
Gee, whiz, how old was I? I don't know. Everybody was there.
Well, like 12 or?
Probably, I was 11, 12 years old, I suppose. Then, I can't remember, you know, I just have no memory of that. But I remember, gee whiz, I thought that was a slaughter. when I seen them doing it.
Oh, did it bother you?
It did when I first started, but then, you know, it just thinking it had to be done. And yeah, they was eating the bark right off all the trees and everything, you know. Gosh, even the shelter belts, you know, they put out a new shelter. That's another windbreak thing. And, I helped Dad. They had a tool up here. You get them to extension, you know, and it had a wheel on it and a deal that you run it down through and go in and out around all them trees. And Dad had run that thing, and I'd run the tractor down through there, pulling it. Well, we worked a lot of shelter belts that way, and then we had a little disc that pulled down there. And you know, after they put those belts out, well, we worked a bunch of those belts in.
That was just to keep the weeds down, get them through the train
pan? Yeah, so that you could have, well, yeah, they weren't getting only water to get is what the good Lord gave us and all that. That was it. And, but, yeah, that was another thing that down through that we learned. Where was we at? I can't remember now. Oh, about the war days, yeah. Yeah, that's about the shock of that hitting. Yeah, I hadn't paid a lot of attention about the war over in Europe till then. But when that hit, I thought, gee, you know, that's pretty close to home. And then it turned into such a terrible tragedy. And I, of course, later in years, I worked for Pete, Lester Petrie out here. He was 18, 19 months prisoner of war too, you know, mm-hmm. Death March and everything that he went to. Yeah, but I worked for him. I've covered a lot of this country in driving tractors. I worked for a lot of different people, Purdue down Truesdale, and.
So the end of the war, you were a teenager, and
yeah,
were you thinking at that time that you might have to go to war?
I didn't.
No, because you weren't
that old
enough.
Never thought about it then. Yeah. But see, well, I went to junior college in 50, but then it broke out, yeah. And they needed help pretty bad then, I guess, because they was drafted. Mm-hmm. And anyhow, after I finished that year, I knew I was going to get drafted. So I never went back then.
Okay, so well, let's go on then. When you were drafted, and that was in 51, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did you go for your basic?
Oh, I went down. Well, I was inducted down to in Oklahoma, and Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and then I went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and I was in the combat and the engineer down there. That's setting up bridges and things ahead of the troops and stuff, and hearing points and things at that time. That's how the artillery, we could tell where it's coming from. But we had to lay lines out ahead of our troops, you know, so. And so they can move on. Anyhow, we spent 14 weeks there. And then I joined up to the airborne, and then I had another guy, and he was from Coldwater.
Why did you do that? Why did you make a change?
Well, and he talked me into it. He said, man, that pays $50 a month more. We didn't make much money, you know. Well, that's right. I said, well, I don't care, because I was in good shape. I've always been a pretty good shape athlete. Anyhow, we joined up and went down there. He flunked out. He missed he didn't make the physical. And I made it. So anyhow, I went ahead and stayed in. And I went down to Fort Benning, took my jump training down there at Fort Benning, Georgia.
And how did you feel about jumping out of airplanes?
Well,
scarier.
No, it's not the way they do it. They start you out on a little platform jump, you know, make a good PLF, parachute landing fall, you know, fold up right, so roll with it. And then you go to 4 foot and 6 foot, and then you jump out of a mock tower that's something like an airplane, and you run down this cable and onto a sawdust pit. But the hardest part of it was that every time you made a mistake, it was a mile around these four towers. You made another lap around the deal, and or push-ups. Anyhow, that's how you got to go. Yeah, I've done a lot of push-ups. every time you make a PLF, sometimes all right. Hit 10, 10 more.
What's
10
a PLF? What is it?
Parachute landing fall.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just, and of course then we didn't have, we just had 46s and 47s.
What's that mean?
Well, that's a type of airplane it was. Anyhow, you could jump out, you could run two out each door, you know. Two sticks out, two platoons, see, there'd be 16 of us in there in the jump drive. But anyhow, the prop blast on them was terrific when you first go out, because the motor, they're two motor jaw, and that prop blast really hit you. And one time it tore my gun loose, the cold piece. But anyway, I tore them loose in my leg. You tied that up with three wraps of string, supposed to hold it. But either I didn't get it tied good or something. Anyhow, that came loose one time. It hit me in the helmet. It come up and hit me, before you got it on your belt, too. But hit me in the helmet. Well, it turned me in the air. Well, I knew, mercy me, I'm going. And when that parachute opened then, it really flopped me around down the other way. I never did forget that. But anyhow, that's how you learn a lot of that. And I got hurt up here, jumping up Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to where I was stationed. I was in 82nd Airborne.
Were you on your way to Korea, or?
No, never did go. Never did go there. Yeah. I got hurt in a jump clear down south, and we was jumping in another drop zone. And it was another one of those massive jumps, and Bill John knows what they're like, too. He got in down in Texas. But anyhow, it was a massive jump, and I was in headquarters outfit. And anyhow, we was some of the last to jump. Somebody got on top of my chute, but I didn't know it until I should have checked it before, and he was clear down on my chute, folding it up. I knew I was falling fast, but there's so many chutes, you know.
Okay.
And
oh.
I should have grabbed it. I got off a guy's chute. I could have went down on his risers if I'd have just checked before. But I didn't do it. Well, after I missed his risers, and I looked up and I see what the deal was. Man, I'm going down by the treetops. My reserve, that's out. Only thing you think about is make a good parachute landing pole. Well, I did all right until my butt hit, and I busted my back. It split my vertebrae. And, yeah, but I've had got fixed up, walking a little bit.
Well, where were you? Where hospital were you at, and how long was your recovery?
I was right there. They've got a huge hospital right there at Fort Bragg. Yeah. And I was right there and spent quite a little time in what's called Tiny Town. That's where they rebuild and get you going. And then when I went back, I wasn't able to go back into the airborne then. So they sent me to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and that's where I ended up. And I worked down there in the 3rd Army Reception Center down there until, one time I got into it down there with the little boy. He wasn't too happy with me. They all took off one time, and I sent a kid over. Here come a whole bunch of down orders, silent orders. Good Lord! And I said, who in the world? That's right. So we didn't do it. We just took off, and went to town too. The rest of it all went to the ball game. So we took off, went down. The next morning they weren't very happy. They said I should have done that. Well, I didn't do it. Anyhow, so I ended up the last 3 months, they wanted to give me a tough job. Well, tough job on butt, you know. I didn't like that either. Anyhow, I end up doing mail in a company. Company C there. I did the mail. Then every month they recruit a lot of guys, from 700 to 900 go through there. And that's what we had to do. Mostly forwarding mail, you know. You're not supposed to write a lot of mail, but yeah, it was terrible, that amount of mail. And I got caught twice doing that. Well, I'd just go out and get me some recruits. I'd line them up down the table and I'd give them a bunch of these mail and the cards, you know, and they were supposed to readdress them darn things, you know. Well, they told me a couple of different times about that. I said, well, you know, they had foot lockers full of back mail. When I went there, they hadn't had nobody for a while, I guess. Well, it ain't long till you get an ungodly lot of mail piled up. So I said, how do you expect to get this done? Well, you know, that's not to be done. Well, I said, okay. Anyhow, when I left there, there was none left in Foot Locker. And the other guy didn't have all that to go through, but I had to go back through from signing the orders and make out a lot of cards and things before you could readdress this stuff, you know. They hadn't even been doing that, so I was unhappy with all that. But I guess that's kind of the way I got in the mail business here then, finally. Ronnie come over and jumped me one to need some help over one day, and I, oh, no. But anyhow, you get in, and almost 11 years I spent the post office in here. But anyhow.
When did you start that here with the post office?
Oh, good Lord. Let's see. When was that? Probably, I don't remember. I'd have to look on that, too. I don't remember. I've kept all that. It's all in the drawer in there, too. I think, I'd say I was probably about 42, maybe.
Okay, 49, 50, 50. So, somewhere in the 60s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I remember you as a postman.
Yeah. I took a disability. My back got to raise neck with me. I've had two back operations. And it got to bother me again, and I got out. I took a disability from the post office. It doesn't pay near as much, but that's all right. I draw 100%.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you got done with your stint in the service, and you came back here and worked for your dad. I think you told us earlier, and somewhere in there you're going to meet your wife.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, my dear wife, she was the only. Her mother was a good cook. She worked at the lunchroom and made meals for different rotaries and different
orders
up here to Northside School. Well, when they built that, yeah. But anyhow, yeah, her and Miss Smith and then Mrs. What's her name? Down south now, I forgot her name already. Schroeder, she helped too. Yeah, but anyhow, that's what she did. And anyhow, her heart got real bad. She just popped little white pills all the time. Ever since her husband, she lost him in a bad wreck, and she was buggered up pretty bad. But anyhow, that's what she had to do. She had a lot of children, and so she worked a lot of jobs. And anyhow, she got so sick, and Ethel was working in up at Topeka in the state house and running machines up there and doing real well, but she was the only one that wasn't married, so she felt like she needed to come home to take care of mom. So she came home and went to work for Dr. Atwood. He just came to town. He was up overhead where Al's clothing was. He was up overhead there then. And she worked for him, and And we met out at the, we liked to go skating at that time. Feldman Brothers had a skating rink out here, Marvin and Chet. And so we skated out there a lot. And, yeah, I knew her. I never did see her up to Peak. She said she, I used to go down to the drugstore down there and we, during breaking school up there once or twice. And we, that day she went down there, I guess I didn't show up that day. So anyhow, that's how we met. Out here at the skating rink most of the time. And
but then you got married and went home.
Yeah, we took off from there because I didn't have no money. She didn't have, you know, she didn't have any either. So I said, that's all right, we'll just go down there. So I had no, well, that old black Chevrolet there. I had an old 48 Chevrolet. So we went down there and got married down there. She always tells the story. She says, yeah, we got a new car after we got married. And we did. In 55, I bought a 55 Chevrolet. And we run it for quite a few years. Yeah, we did. But anyhow, we was young then. I haven't got that much guts to go in debt like that anymore. But then, when you're young, you don't worry about things like that, I guess. Shoot.
And what were you doing when you married her? What was your occupation?
That's when I was working for Harley Thompson. Harley Thompson down there. That's I couldn't
that
think of his name. Margo.
That was the lawyer.
The lawyer, yeah. Okay. Yeah, him and Moffitt. He used to come down. Moffitt, he didn't carry books like Harley had a lot of books. He'd come down and I'd have to look something up for him sometimes. He was a comical sort of a guy. Yeah. Anyhow, yeah, I worked for him about a year and Dick Cox come over then and he was working for Single Mammals food store and they was needing some help, so I said, well, yeah, I guess it'd be all right. And I made a little bit more. I was going to make $54. We worked 54 hours. I worked for $1 an hour. That's what it was back then. And so I got $54 before anything's out there.
And what did you do at Mammal?
So I worked mostly stocking and produce. I worked produce. That was the main thing I was supposed to do. And Harold Lear come, and he went on vacation or something happened. Anyhow, he was gone one time, and they sent some kid down from St. John to manage it anyhow. That's all right, didn't bother me, but Swede come in there one evening, and he was aggravated as all get out, because the produce wasn't happening like it should be. Needed more of this, needed that. I said, good Lord, you know, we'd be tearing it up pretty soon. We always had to take everything out and clean all that before you leave every Saturday. Anyhow, he got mad about it, and I didn't put up with that either. So anyhow, he fired me right there. So I just walked out. Well, old Harold, he was unhappy about it, but that's all right. I went down and went to work for Bob and Dean down to the store right on down the street. Yeah, where the paper is now. And then I worked for them until, well, I helped move back over to the news store. And, you know. But, now I work for Cross Manufacturing over about 5 years over there after that.
What did you do there?
I run two automatic lathes. I work lathes. And, yeah, they big machines that you got to turn it and then you have to set all of it up. And, yeah, I run backs and pistons at that time.
About how many people worked for Cross at that time?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know. There was really quite a few. I mean, they brought the little steel in and everything, but yeah, there was a lot of them that I'd worked for and everything that working up there then. Even Shorty Johnson, he was in the tool room. He'd sharpen the tools for us, and we had to reset all our own tools and everything. And,
now, but, how did you get trained for that job? Just
right
on the
there,
job?
Right there on the job, yeah. his name right now, but he's gone too. But anyhow, he trained me how to do it and everything. And yeah, they were, I worked over about every 30 seconds and kick out another part. And I just, one set this way and the other set over here. I just chuck that one up and burr it and chuck it up, you know, and out and put it in the can. And, you know, it was just routine, just the same thing all the time. And that's where I got to smoke too many cigarettes. You always have a cigarette in your hand, seem like, gosh, down your mouth.
And now, when did you get started smoking? I got started smoking
when I was in the airborne, yeah, down there. And I smoked for about 30 years. And I was up here when my dad had problems and seen the trouble he went through, and that was coming from smoking too darn much. He had cancer and it just went all through him. But anyhow, I quit in 81. Yeah. So, like I say, about 30 years I spent.
Now, were you and your wife living in Kinsley all the time? Or?
Yeah, we lived in Kinsley for quite a while. Yeah. Well,
when
we first got married, we moved in with her mom because that was the reason she came home to start with. But then when Steve come along, we moved back over on 4th Street back there in one of them duplexes that old Young had at that time. Anyhow, we moved around quite a few places, blocked south of the school. I don't know how many places we did live in till we bought this place. Well, we lived out on the farm. After Dad moved into town, we moved out there. Well, that's when I was working at Crosses.
I was wondering.
That's right. That's when we was working at
Crosses. Were you working at Crosses? What years were you
Man, there you go again.
I know. These darn years.
I don't ever. Now,
Or did you have all your children at that time? Or?
No, we didn't. We probably, 50, there, I think there was maybe, I can't remember where Peggy was born yet, but it was probably in the 50, wasn't it?
The end of the 60s, 61 maybe, 62 maybe even,
till then. I expect we moved back in here then. She never liked the farm, though. She didn't drive, you know. She don't yet today. So, but I couldn't get along without her. She helps me with all my poetry and everything I have to do, and very good at it.
And where were your children born?
They were all born here in Kinsley. Yeah, Dr. Atwood. She never messed around. In fact, I missed Brian, I believe it was. I was running a truck out here for Strong's. We were putting insulates in the silo, and I was running a truck out there for him. And Lee come out, and he says, "You're wanted in town." Your wife said, "Oh," I said, "Oh my gosh, okay." So I went uptown. Yep, she was in there. I guess sure as world. And I said, "Gee, wait, I'm dirtier. Oh, get out, you know." And so I said, "All right, I'm clean up." Well, I didn't get cleaned up back there, and he was already here. So, but I was up there. Yeah, I helped. In fact, give her some oxygen and stuff every once in a while. And Dr. Atwood, there was having three babies up there all at the same time. Brown and her and somebody else, I can't remember who it was. Anyhow, they was running wild. So he just had me stand in there. I did that, and he did the rest of it. And yeah, that's how I was.
And we should maybe mention that Mr. Spark has six children, right?
Oh, yeah, six. Yeah.
And they started And Stephen was born in 55, and then Scott, yeah. Shelley, Brian, Douglas, and Peggy Sue was born in 60.
I'm not for sure. 64, 5, okay.
So that 10 years from the.
I thought something like that. It was pretty. Some of them was only 13. I think Scott was only 13 months or something like that after Stephen born. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember during that time, the kids were going to school here in Kinsley, and maybe Lewis part of the time, though, right? Were they old or no? Okay, no, so they went to Kinsley. They were always in Kinsley. I'm trying to think.
Dad janitored at Southside Schoolhouse when he worked at school for 9 years. Mom, after she left the bank, working for Mr. Parker, you know, secretary of Mr. Parker, yeah. Then Mr. Dawson got her to come over there and work. She worked there for 11 years for Mr. Dawson. She kept books and everything. I mean, it was, you know.
What did Mr. Dawson do?
He was superintendent of school.
Superintendent,
I think.
Okay.
He was superintendent.
Like 12,000 a year, I think he made here. I mean, but you know, people just didn't make the money yet.
Well, then. Mr. Dawson was superintendent and principal.
Yes, he was. Yes.
And your mother did everything.
I
she
know,
was the only secretary for the whole school
district. I know.
District.
It was just she did. She did a lot of it, but.
And she worked late and came in early and.
Carol, my younger sister, she's passed away now, but she was kind of like that, honey. She just didn't matter. She worked down in Wichita for a while, and just the city there, it didn't matter. One more job didn't matter. Seemed like she's able to do it, but I kind of get in a pattern myself, and, you know.
Okay, so when did you get TV? Did you have it at your home or not, or later?
Oh, no, man.
Did you have it when you were still living at, before you went to Korea?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you were pretty much.
Oh, yeah. We had TV. In fact, we had TV out here, but after, I suppose, electric come through, maybe, was. I out at the phone.
Yeah, electricity was so late, they might have been right on top of each other.
That's when we got TV out there. Yeah, that's all we didn't have.
What changes did you see in, of course, now you're pretty much not farming, I guess. But
no, I
or you we, kept, in it, what changes
well,
have you seen in farming in the 50s and the 60s?
Oh.
As opposed to when you were growing up. You already talked about fertilizer.
They do it so much different. It's a lot better now, but it's a lot more expensive too. You know, it's a much better way, but this is a thing that always bothers, and I'm bad about, I guess, because our country. We spent more than we were able to produce. We're not worth what people wanted. And back in them days, you know, we survived. We took care of our needs and things like that, you know. Everybody looked after needs, you know. But nowadays, the biggest thing is what we've missed teaching our kids, the value of living. We've forgot what we were really put on earth for, to help each other and love our neighbor and everything, and we've got completely away from that. And I think that's the biggest thing that really bothers me. Farming, yeah, it has improved, but big business always comes to a full house. Then what happens when big business comes to a full house? Everything goes down. Back in the days, in the Dust Bowl days, their banks closed. They just closed the banks. There was a lot of little banks then, you know. Well, we come around, us people had to pull the banks out again. For what reason? I use a spiral notebook each year. I keep all my stuff in one spiral notebook. I keep them in rows. That's all I use. I don't have any trouble keeping my business straightened out. I don't understand how we people can get so far in for a want of something they really don't need. Their needs need to be changed. I think that's the biggest thing that makes me feel bad about, which taught our generations the wrong thing, I think. And reading, writing, arithmetic is the main, you know, all this extra stuff, that's extra in life. But you have to know this. And it's like the computer. Weston, he's still working on, he works up to kind of Kansas State on theirs up there now, you know, and he's got a job there in Manhattan, I guess, now, working with the computers, and that's what he's staying with now. That's Peggy's, the oldest one.
Okay, we've got a declining population in the 50s and 60s.
Land.
Where are your children? Are any of them in the area?
Yeah, Brian lives here in town, of course. His wife, they were in the Colley greenhouse up here, of course. And he works for the county out here, too, and does yard work. But anyhow, Scott, yeah, he's in the insurance business in Caldwell County, but he sells insurance everywhere. And they built a new house over here between here and Lewis after their house was demolished down at Greensburg, tornado down there. And Steve, our oldest boy, he's out at Garden City, and he's been, he went 20 straight months down at Emporia State and learned this heating and air conditioning down there, and he stayed with it all the way, and he works for Weber's out there. It's in Dodge, and he's over the guys that work out in the field. He does all that, and people that gripe about paying their bills and stuff, he settles all that. But he's got, he's of course married too. And who else have we
Shelley?
Got? Oh yeah, Shelley. She's, she worked down at Bank in Hudson for years, and she got a chance to get in with the Silver Dollar City. Wanted to come down there, so she went down there and worked in banking and their business down there and taking books and now she's they buy whatever it takes. They goes to the deal, and she has to get, they change stuff around all the time, and then she has to see that they get the new stuff into the every place down there at Silver Dollar City, and she's into all that now. She got out of all bookkeeping now, and she didn't want to go to Florida. They want her to go down to, that's her main office down there, and she didn't want to go down there. And for her husband, works in a heating and air conditioning outfit. He makes all their ducting down there. So he didn't want to go down there either. So she just took this job there, and she likes it a lot better. She got tired of all that book working. It's like all big businesses, got a lot of umbrella businesses. Mm-hmm. They're involved in a lot of things. And
okay.
So anyhow.
Douglas?
Douglas, yeah. Douglas, he had friends here in Kinsley, him and the Frame Boys, and we had a lot of them around here. It was a good thing when Doug finally went up to Kansas City. My brother and his wife were teaching school in Shawnee Mission School System, and So anyhow, he went up there and they started a shingle business up there. And so Doug worked, and my brother worked up there on their days off and everything, and even in the shingling business up there, and did quite well. And he finally got out of that, and had a chance to get in with a guy up there that they did insulating and like in hospitals, big boiler rooms, different things like that, where they have to have insulation done and all that. Man, he never has taken the old asbestos off. He don't do that part of it. Mm-hmm. They just redoes it. And so anyhow, he worked up there for that outfit quite a few years, and his wife got a job back in Indiana. She was working out there too, but it was such a crazy money change that she had to go back and change jobs. So Doug says, well, okay, you know, I can find a job anywhere. Well, he did. He found a job back there in Indianapolis, and he's been at it ever since, and he's got 80 guys working under him. Yeah. And they do the same kind of putting up and building new hospitals and stuff like that, and those old fuel outfits back there everywhere, whatever, what do you call like down Texas. Anyhow, they have to work in those two and redoing them every once in a while, and that's what he does. I mean,
okay. And how about Peggy?
Well, Peggy, well, Peggy's, she's Peggy. She had three children, and they're all very studious kids. They've done very well.
Where does she live?
And she lives in Hoyt, Kansas now. It's 11 mile north of Topeka. She works for the state. She travels around different places and makes sure that they're doing their business right, and that they've got their schooling, and that's her job now.
So your children have sort of been half and half. Some have stayed in western Kansas, and some have left. And
yeah, they've taken where the jobs have taken them, and some of them have survived all right. It's been Scott's done very well, but he's had to do a lot of schooling. Every week he goes to another meetings all the time. It's just the way life is. Everything's being changed, you know.
And what other changes have you seen in Edwards County, being that you've been all over it nearly? during the 50s and 60s.
Well, the thing that's sad. Again, another sad thing. When I was a kid, there was a property zone for every quarter. If you had a half section, you was doing good, you know. There was a lot of people all through there, you know. Of course, they were just getting started. And now it's so sad. It's just big farms. Like that little grandson's working out there. I mean, they farm 32, 33, 4 quarters, something like that now. Less than 11 irrigation systems, and I mean, they're working on machinery all the time, and you've got motors to change all the systems. I mean, it's a madhouse, but he makes good money. But it's a need that we have to have, but what's going to happen pretty soon? I mean, I keep looking in these. I'm supposed to not worry, but I've seen this happen, you know, in a lifetime before. At some point, and it's going to be through technology. That's why we strive on technology so much. But these kids are going to have to know this, because that's our future. I mean, we've done everything there is around the earth. Now the ocean floor, we don't know a lot about the ocean floor yet, but you know, space and everything, yeah, space has brought us into stuff. But right now, we need the technology. There's many people on this earth that we live on, and we've got to figure a way that we don't do away with everybody and yet furnish enough food and things that people are able to survive. Well, you cannot keep making bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger money. I don't care how you do it. If you get millions more people, even them people have got to have some kind of living. The only thing that supports things like that is what we're worth. If we're not able to make something worth it, so where does this come in at? You know, there's only so many dollars, and that's what gets me. I don't know how you can be in.
What do you see for the future of Edwards County in regard to that technology and the bigger farms? And
it's all right. I mean, it'll we'll survive out here a lot better than the people eventually back east. There's so many of them, and there's so many towns. Because we're used to this. Our feeling, just us worry warts that worry about it, I guess. But yeah, we'll get along out here, but don't you think? The only thing that, another thing that we've got to quit this irrigating. We've only got so much water. And this is the thing that I think we should strive on. We've got to learn how to raise this stuff and not have to pump all this water all the time. I mean, I think we've got to learn, because that's hard to replace. And when that water's all gone, you know, that happened to Indians when they came down through here. They always had to move on. That's the reason they migrated too. And so eventually, if we let that happen, that's what's going to happen. Keep planting as time. Well, you know, when people first came out here, there was no trees out in this country at all, hardly. Just a few. And down through the years, that helps out. And hopefully, you know, rain and things will eventually come up. Pasture ground is what makes the streams. We were down here in the south here not too long ago. We liked to ride down there. We was down in them little towns. And it's still running down there because of the pasture ground. And here the Arkansas won't even run. Farming does away with that. It doesn't preserve the moisture like pasture ground does. So hopefully we need more pasture ground right today. We need more pasture ground because the state quarantined thousands of acres down there now because of a disease that they've gotten the cattle down there. And so they've got 250 head of cows out there where Eric works. And there's no place to go now. I don't know where they're going to go now, but they've been going down there for years. But anyhow, these are the things that we always have to keep ahead. And our children, I don't know where they're going to end up. And we need industry. That's a thing that we need, even in Kinsley, Edwards County. See, we have not one car dealer, not one machinery dealer. We've got Circle K Auto Parts. That's in Edwards County. You know, and this is a farming, ranching community. You know, I said, where did we lose out? You know, I mean, what's happened? Well, see, there again, big business gets buying direct, big quantities, you know, so that leaves a little guy out. So what kind of an industry do young kids start in anymore? Well, yeah, it's like going down here on Saturday morning, they bake pies and stuff like that. I mean, that's something like this, a little thing like that, maybe get you started, you know, if you like to do it, that's fine, you know. That's the only thing I know to do. I mean, if the kids that, all kids are not made in, to be smart, I guess. But they like doing things. Everybody needs jobs. That's all there is to it. Everybody needs jobs. And the kids today, across the way, there's so many of them, they don't have jobs. But I don't know what you do. I always thought that when they put that law in, you wasn't to work a kid, you know, until, well, you know, working till then, he's already set in his ways. That was foolish. That was crazy. You know, and not harming the kids? Well, I always thought that's the reason we had courts for, to handle those situations. And if they were being abused, well, that's not right. No, you don't have to do that. And so, but we, our court systems, not just here, but I mean around, I feel like they failed us in a lot of ways. But so has our Congress and senators or other forms of government. And as far as presidents concerned, you know, we've had trouble with pros and cons for all of them. I don't care enough. I don't like politics. That's the face. I'm a Republican, but that don't matter. Because I like a chance to get ahead, and I don't like a lot of rules and regulations. But too many of the people anymore, there is no rules and regulations to the millionaires, crybabies I call them, up on Wall Street. That was because they didn't get $1 million raises. Well, who's worth $1 million? Nobody. Nobody's worth $1 million. I don't give a hoot how many houses they got. That's not right. But we have no way to control it in the CEOs. There's no control. And you get in the oil business, that's been running rapid forever, and they still got guts enough to come out and put that in papers, how much they make each quarter. And yet, how are we going to buy another gallon of gas? You know? So these things bother me a lot. And that's a big change, but you see what all small towns are dwindling away, and I've seen it all down to the line where I used to live. They're gone, you know, and they'll all be gone too here one of these days. I don't know just where we'll end up, but eventually, I'm a guy that thinks everything goes revolves. Everything goes around. The earth, everything. The bad season and things that catastrophes were having, even Australia, got grounded this year. Their wheat crop's no good, you know. And then Japan, the terrible thing happened. But it's happened all around. Well, eventually it's going to roll on around and we'll be wet here again. I mean, you know, it's not too bad, but it has been a little dry around here in western Kansas especially, but everything revolves around, and you just have to do your farming and everything accordingly, and business is hard to plan anymore because of the changing times. Everything's always changing. And I guess I kind of talk on so much change and change. But we live in a changing world.
Yeah, we do.
And there's no way out of it. And so that's the way I feel about it. The good Lord give us things to on earth to work with, and we've kind of abused ourselves and a way of doing things down through the years, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And
is there anything else that you would like on this tape that about your life that we haven't brought up?
I've had a good life. I've I've been in a lot of hospitals, had a lot of operations, and I've never had no regrets of any of them. It's always been good. My care has always been great. I always tried to be a good patient, and I think I must have been. I think the good Lord has helped me a lot of times.
And you stayed in Edwards County.
I've been here ever since.
A good place to have lived.
And yes. Oh yeah. Well, you know, we've been a lot of trips around. After we got started going, we spent 13 years at winter down in Texas, and then a lot of summers we spent out in Colorado and various places. But you know, hey, you get close to here, you're always glad to get back home. Mm-hmm. It's just different life. It's a good life out here. It's just we just need more things for the young people to be involved in or get to doing. I don't know, everything got too much emphasis on it, took too much money, and grandma, both parents had to start working, and well, that kind of lost control of family and everything like this, and that's we as people wanted too much. That's all. That's it. And I think that's it. Someday we'll get it figured out.